Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Saturday morning wake-up call on this 8th of November, 30 minutes after the 10 o'clock hour. I hope you enjoyed your week. It was a historic week, and we'll certainly get to that over the course of the program. But we'll begin in Lubbock, Texas, which has become a college football hotbed all of a sudden in the last 2 weeks as the Texas Tech Red Raiders tried to pull off another big-time win, as they did, likewise against Texas last week, as they upset then number one Texas to ascend to the number two position in the BCS rankings. And who knows, if they're able to beat Oklahoma State tonight, they could jump Alabama regardless of what Alabama does against LSU. But of course, first things first. You know, this is not going to be an easy game for Texas Tech by any stretch of imagination. Beyond the fact that they're coming off, again, an emotional win against Texas, you know, that game, of course, was a tremendous college football game, went down to the wire, Michael Crabtree with the catch and what have you. But Oklahoma State is a good football team. Oklahoma State comes into this game number nine in the BCS. They come into this game, they only lost to Texas, which, again, that was in Texas, by the way, and they played Texas. Prior to the Texas Tech game, Oklahoma State had given Texas by far and away its toughest game. A game that they easily could have won. They are a very physical team. They have a great running game. They have a great, good quarterback, great wide receiver. A lot of people think Dez White is just as good as Michael Crabtree. Dez Bryant is just as good as Michael Crabtree. That remains to be seen. We'll certainly get a good look at that, glimpse of that tonight. So this is not going to be an easy game for Texas Tech. I mean, Oklahoma State has that running game. They have the kind of style of football that can keep Grant Harrell and that Texas Tech offense off the field. And when you can run the ball, control the line of scrimmage, control the clock, that is in a lot of ways your best defense. And again, keep in mind, this is what did Texas in. Texas had four straight games where they had to play ranked opponents in consecutive weeks. They won three of them. By the time that fourth game came around, they were just worn down. This would be Texas Tech's second consecutive big-time matchup. And this is not just a national championship caliber type game with national championship implications with it. Do they have enough? Are they mentally strong enough to rebound coming off that game last week? The good thing for Texas Tech is the game is at home. Because if this game were at Oklahoma State, there's no question in my mind that Oklahoma State would win. But it is at home, and it should be a great game. I'm looking, this game will be played into the fourth quarter, nip and tuck, and these two teams are very evenly matched. They both have great offenses. Texas Tech, listen, I have to take mea culpa for what I said about them last week. That defense stood up last week against Texas. I know Texas ended up putting 33 points on the board, but a lot of those were in chase mode. And a lot of those were when Texas Tech was clearly in control of the game. Their defense knocked Colt McCoy around. I mean, they knocked him around from the start of the game to the finish. Maybe they got a little bit tired in the fourth quarter because Texas controlled the ball for the most part in the fourth quarter. But that defensive line of Texas Tech, I was extremely impressed with that defense last week. Because we've seen Texas Tech have great offenses before. It's not nothing new for a Texas Tech quarterback to lead the nation in passing efficiency or yards, passing yards or touchdowns, but their defense had been non-existent in those years where they had great offense. That's not the case this year. They have a very good defense. Texas Tech could win the national championship. They are a national championship caliber team. Make no mistake about it. I don't think they will because they have to play Oklahoma State today. Even if they beat Oklahoma State tonight, they have to travel to Norman and beat Oklahoma next week. A little bit too much to ask, if you ask me. And that doesn't even include the Big 12 championship. But that should be a great game. It was a tremendous scene in Lubbock, Texas last week as the fans just rushed the field, tear down the goalposts before the game was even over with. And they should have a similar outcome to this week's game. The second big game of this week, you have Alabama and Nick Saban traveling down to Baton Rouge to face his former team, the LSU Tigers. LSU is done as far as any national championship or even SEC championship implications. They, Now they're just playing spoiler. They have a chance to spoil Alabama's season, possibly, as Alabama comes into this game ranked number one. Listen, everybody in the world is telling you how close this game is going to be. I mean, there might even be some people picking Alabama, LSU to beat Alabama. I don't see it. I have not been impressed with LSU at all this year. Their defense has been very suspect in the past month. They've given up 50 points twice in the last month, both to Georgia and Florida. Alabama has a type of team that can physically, I think, push around LSU on both sides of the ball. Alabama has been solid this year, has been great this year on both sides of the ball. They're getting good play out of the quarterback. They have, of course, a very explosive wide receiver in the Jones kid. I mean, if this game, I would not be surprised if this game is 38-17. Now, maybe Alabama doesn't put 50 on LSU, but I can see Alabama decisively beating LSU. I really can. Now, I certainly wouldn't shock you if LSU plays this game close. You know, this is the SEC. It is down. It is, and it will be in, at LSU in Baton Rouge. So that wouldn't surprise you by any stretch of the imagination. But I just got this gut feeling that Alabama's going to pull away and handle LSU. Alabama's toughest game is going to be it by far, and I don't think the Auburn game is going to be that tough anymore. The way Auburn has just fallen off the cliff. Alabama's acid test is going to be against Florida, who right now, Florida, nobody wants to see Florida right now. Florida is playing on such a high level right now. I mean, they are killing people. They're absolutely killing people. What they've done to LSU and Georgia in the past month is ridiculous. I mean, it's not fair with how their offense is playing. Their defense is playing great as well. Tebow looks like he's on a mission. And Florida definitely is poised to make that SEC championship. Their only bump in the road possibly can be against Florida State. At Florida State, I would expect them to win that game, but that looking at their schedule, that would be the only threat of them losing before they will reach the SEC championship, where they will more than likely take on Alabama. But I like Alabama in this game. I really do. I think there'll be a little bit too much for LSU, and I think Alabama. I think people don't realize how good this Alabama team is. They're not a fancy team. They're more like an NFL type team as far as being built and being dominant on both lines of scrimmage. Saban has done a tremendous job at rebuilding and getting this program back to championship status. And speaking of Nick Saban, enough already about from the LSU fans and from anybody else who supports LSU talking about Nick Saban. Get over it. Nick Saban built LSU's program. LSU's program is one of the five or six best programs in the country right now. It would not be like that if it wasn't for Nick Saban. He won a championship there in 2003. Les Miles has done a great job in maintaining that tradition by winning a championship, of course, last season, despite losing two games. And that program would not be at the level it is right now if it wasn't for Nick Saban. That program would, trust me, when Saban got to LSU, the program was an okay program at best. It was not a powerhouse by any stretch of imagination. You know, the guy won a championship for you. He left the program in great standing as far as recruiting, as far as name recognition. He goes, takes the money in the NFL. You know, so be it. Get over it. Now, if you're a Miami Dolphins fan, you should be a little ticked off at Saban. Of course, that's a whole different animal to talk about. But Saban definitely did a great job at LSU, and again, has carried that on to Alabama. And if they don't win a championship this year, it will not be too far in the distant future before Alabama does win a championship. He has them on the right track without question. USC will host Cal. Cal comes in ranked number 21. USC, despite the fact that over the last 5 weeks, since that loss to Oregon State, USC has dominated, and I mean dominated, their Pac-10 opponents. They come in with a BCS ranking at number 7. USC has shut out 3 of their last 5 opponents, and to show for it, they've actually fallen in the BCS rankings. They were jumped by Texas Tech, of course, when Texas Tech beat Texas last week. They were 5th a couple of weeks ago. Now they're finding themselves 7th. And now, USC needs some help. If they want to win a championship, USC needs a lot of help. Obviously, they would need Florida probably to lose. They would need Florida to lose, Oklahoma, they would need a lot of teams to lose in order for them to get to that national championship game. And certainly not out of the realms of possibility. The way college football season has went, who knows what can happen. But USC definitely needs some help, and they will take on Cal. They will take on Cal in a game where you know you would think USC would have this way with Cal. Cal, you know, this is the same Cal team that lost to Maryland earlier in the season. The game is at USC. And again, the way USC is playing right now, you'd be hard pressed to see any team in the Pac-10 being able to handle them or being able to deal with them. And they control their own destiny they don't control their own destiny. USC could play for a national championship and not even win the Pac-10. Because right now, you look at the Pac-10 standings, Oregon State has the same win-loss record as USC in the Pac-10 standings. The only difference is Oregon State's overall record is not as good, but they only have one loss as well as in compared to USC. So USC still has a lot to play for, despite how dominant they've been. They still have a lot to play for within the Pac-10 conference. Not so much, not only just on a national level, but even within that conference, as that race is very tight. That is a very tight race right now. So they need to keep winning if they want to play for a national championship possibly, or even if they want to go to a Rose Bowl. Because as of right now, California, Oregon State, are both 4-1. USC has a half-game lead over Cal and Oregon State. They're 5-1. But again, the important thing to remember out of this is Oregon State holds the tiebreaker over USC by beating them earlier in the season. So if Oregon State wins out and USC wins out, Oregon State would be your Pac-10 champion, because Oregon State has a game with California later on this season. As far as local, in terms of the ATC, if you're a Maryland fan right now, you have to be just – if you want to renege on your allegiance to Maryland, I have absolutely no problem with it. Maryland has been just one of the mysteries of college football as far as I'm concerned. This is a team that coming into the game last night, and amazingly, they still control their own destiny as far as getting to the ACC championship. But coming into that game on Thursday against Virginia Tech, they were coming off a great win. They were coming off some quality wins versus Wake Forest and North Carolina State. You know, they had beaten Clemson when Clemson was ranked earlier in the season. They had beaten California when California was ranked and they're still ranked. I just don't get Maryland. They are impossible to figure out how a team could go up there to Lane Stadium, which is not an easy place to play. We know Virginia Tech's record on Thursday night football is great. I mean, they came into the game, I believe, 14-2 on Thursday nights. But this is not a big-time Virginia Tech team. This Virginia Tech team, they don't have a quarterback as far as I'm concerned. They're not that good on both lines of scrimmage, or offensive or defensive line, in comparison to some of the earlier teams that Frank Beamer has had. And you let a running back, a guy who before the season you probably hadn't even heard of, Darren Evans, run all over you. The guy runs for 253 yards when you know that all they're going to do is run the ball. They didn't even know, you know, I'm watching that game and watching the pregame. They didn't even know who was going to play quarterback leading up to the game. I mean, Aaron Andrews is scrambling for interviews with Frank Beamer saying, coach, I mean, who's this going to be? Finally, about 10 to 15 minutes before the game, he announced that it was going to be Glennon to play quarterback on a bad ankle, by the way. Because Taylor's hurt. So I just don't get Maryland right. I truly don't understand it. It had to be frustrating as a Maryland fan to watch this team play. Yeah, I mean, it has to drive you crazy. But amazingly, despite that loss, which was an embarrassing one as far as I'm concerned, they still control their own destiny. Maryland, it's not an easy schedule. They'll be home next week to North Carolina, who's ranked. They'll be home to Florida State, who's ranked, and they'll be finished the season off at Boston College. If they win those last three games, they will play for the ACC Championship. They are in the Atlantic Division. The Coastal Division for the ACC is a little bit more complicated. Virginia, who has amazing, again, similar to Maryland, amazingly has beaten, I think, the two most impressive teams in the ACC in North Carolina and Georgia Tech. They've beaten both of them, but yet they can't beat Duke. They can't beat Connecticut. They can't beat a Miami and Florida team that is down this year. I mean, this is not a vintage Miami Florida team by any stretch. I mean, I don't understand them either. They don't control their own destiny because of the Miami losses. Miami and Virginia Tech finishes with the same record within the conference. Miami and Florida will be the conference winner, assuming that Georgia Tech has a worse record than Miami and Florida. Again, don't get me into the tiebreakers with the ACC Coastal Division. Who knows what can happen with that? It's going to be one of these. Miami and Florida, if Miami and Florida runs the table, they do have a game at Georgia Tech. So if Miami and Florida runs the table, Miami and Florida will play for the ACC Championship. They do control their own destiny. Virginia needs some help. Maryland controls his own destiny. So there you go with the ACC in a nutshell. You have eight teams in the ACC with two losses that has two losses. I mean, the conference is wide open. I've never seen it like this. It's not so much that it's bad football either. You know, ACC does not have a powerhouse team. They have a number of teams that are very good. They're very good teams. Florida State, you have to include and throw into that mix. Wake Forest, you have to throw them into that mix. That certainly. Miami has been okay. Has been better than I thought this year, actually. So the ACC has been absolutely wide open, and it will continue to be wide open. As who knows what two teams will be playing in the ACC championship down in Tampa. As far as the overall picture in terms of college football, again, and the Penn State fans, I know a lot. Let me get to address the Penn State fans who were absolutely annoyed by Texas Tech jumping them in the standings, in the BCS standings. Texas Tech went from 7-2, and I understand they beat number one in the country, but that's a pretty steep jump. They should not have jumped Penn State. Listen, to the Penn State fans, don't worry, I would not worry about it in the least bit. Penn State, when you have Iowa, Michigan State and then Michigan State, Indiana, if you take care of business, you will play for a national championship. Texas Tech's schedule is 100 times harder, more difficult than Penn State's schedule. Who knows? Alabama could lose a game between now and the time that the BCS standings are finalized. So if I'm a Penn State fan, I'm not worried at all about. I'm not even worried. I'm just worried about my team taking care of business and winning the Big Ten, with finishing with no losses and playing for the national championship. Texas Tech is going to lose one of these next two games. They're either going to lose today, or they're going to lose to next week at Oklahoma. They're going to lose one of those games. It's just too hard to beat three high level teams in three consecutive weeks. It's hard enough to beat three high-level teams in a season, let alone in three consecutive weeks. That is very difficult. So I'm a Penn State fan. I'm not even worried about possibly getting burned like you did back in 68 and 69 and also in the 94 seasons. We're just getting started here on this Saturday morning wake-up call. The call number is 347-215-6180. We have a lot to do. NFL picks is coming up. We'll talk about the NFL a lot over the course of the hour. Every team has now played at least eight games as we enter this week 10 of the NFL season. It's starting to become, getting down to the nitty-gritty with the NFL. We'll do that. We'll also introduce a new segment for the Redskins fans called Inside the Burgundy and Gold. We'll talk about the Redskins who had a rough beginning of the week. The latter part of the week got better, and I'll explain that on the update. But it had a rough beginning of the week with the loss at home against Pittsburgh. So that'll be coming up after the update. Here's the update. 15 minutes. After every 15 minutes of the hour, D'Angelo Hall has signed with the Washington Redskins for a one-year deal. Of course, Hall was cut earlier this week by the Oakland Raiders, and I know he has to be happy about that. He signs a 1-year deal. He kind of solidifies that at Washington secondary, which has been kind of been injured, banged up with Sean Springs being banged up. So you, I mean, listen, if he can perform any way that you know he can, I know he's gonna just play a slip. That's a great pickup for the Redskins. NBA scores: Miami defeats San Antonio 99-83. The big story of this game: Tony Parker. And boy, this when it rains, it pours for the San Antonio Spurs. Tony Parker goes down with an injured ankle. He will be out at least 2 to 4 weeks. And you know, with these ankle injuries, who knows how long they'll be out. I mean, that 4 weeks, it could be even longer than 4 weeks, depending on how fast it heals. Parker had been leading the league in scoring, had a big game earlier this week with the 55 points and 10 assists. Utah defeats Oklahoma City 104-97. Utah improves to 5-0. Jerry Sloan becomes the first coach in NBA history to win 1,000 games with one team. Coach Sloan's been around forever, it seems like, and he's done a great job with the Jazz. New Jersey spoils the debut of one Allen Iverson, who got traded earlier this week, of course, to the Detroit Pistons, 103-96. Iverson, in his debut, had 24 points to go along with 6 assists. Break up the Hawks. The Hawks have improved to 4-0. They smashed Toronto 110-92. A lot of people thought the Hawks were going to be down this year, but they have had some excellent wins over the course of this season. They're already beating New Orleans, beating Orlando, and now they beat the Raptors 110-92. Charlotte upsets New Orleans 92-89. Other winners in last night's schedule was Chicago, Memphis, Houston, Sacramento, Boston, the Knicks, Cleveland, and Denver. Yes, I did say the Knicks as they were able to prevail. So 15 minutes after every 15 minutes, we will have the update and give you the latest and breaking news in the world of sports. Now we enter week 10 of the NFL season, and again, it is nitty and gritty time. It's November. It's starting to get colder in some places. Maybe not the East Coast. I mean, this past week you had some 65 to 70 degree days, but you expect as the month goes along that the weather will start to become a factor in these games, especially in the Northeast. It's where the running games, the offensive lines, the defensive lines take over, and if you don't have a running game going into November, December, and you're trying to win a championship or make the playoffs, it's gonna be pretty uphill sledding for teams that just like to throw the ball. Here are the week 10 picks, and game number one. This could have been the game of the week, but I chose otherwise. Will be the Giants traveling down 90-95 South to Philadelphia to play the Eagles. The line is the Eagles are favored by 3. This was a very tough game to pick. The Giants are playing great football, playing on a high level right now. They have the best pass rush in football without question. Eli is steady. They have completely been bought into that whole team concept. They've ignored Plaxico Burress. And Burress last week seemed to have some kind of accountability for some of the dumb things he's done. So this was a very difficult game to pick, but I'm going with the Eagles. I think the Eagles are the more desperate team. Right now the Eagles are at 5-3, right in the middle of that playoff race in the NFC, which by the way, it might take 10 wins to get into the playoffs in the NFC the way it's going right now. Right now you have 12 teams who have 4 losses or less in the NFC. I thought at the beginning of the season that it might only take 8 wins, but minimum is going to take 9 wins. It might even take 10, but this is absolutely a game that the Philadelphia Eagles have to have if they have any chance of trying to win a division. More than likely, they're not going to win a division anyway, but if they lose this game, then they can forget about the division, and it'll also put them in a tough spot in terms of trying to make the playoffs. But again, I like the Eagles in this game. The Eagles are starting to get healthy. Westbrook is starting to play good football. He looks like he's fully healthy again. McNabb has played well all season long. Expect this to be a very physical game. And I wonder, with the Giants, how many weeks in a row can they play on this high level? They're due for a bad performance, for a performance where they just, not so much don't come to play, but for a performance where they just are flat or just don't play well. They are more than due. So I like the Eagles in a close game, 27-24. Game number two, Indianapolis travels to Heinz Field to take on the Pittsburgh Steelers, and this has been the case for most of the season for the Steelers. They come into the game banged up. Roethlisberger, and that's it. Now, there was no line on this game as of yet. That's because there was speculation that Roethlisberger might not play, about him with that shoulder injury. He will play. Roethlisberger will play this game, and who knows how long he will play. But they have a more, as you saw against the Washington Redskins, the Steelers have a more than capable backup in terms of a Byron Leftwich. Again, I got burnt earlier this year by picking against the Steelers when they were all banged up going up against the Jacksonville Jaguars in a game that Jacksonville needed, but Pittsburgh was able to come out on the road and defeat Jacksonville. I'm not going to get fooled. I'm not getting fooled again. I mean, this Pittsburgh Steelers team, I was very impressed with them on Monday night. Of course, they came out there and did whatever they wanted to in the second half against the Washington Redskins. This is a championship caliber team without question. They know how to win. Roethlisberger will play. Willie Parker, even though Willie Parker and Heath Miller will be out, I think Indianapolis has been a little inconsistent this year. And again, coming off that game against New England, I wonder about them getting up for back-to-back tough games. I'm not worried about Pittsburgh as far as them getting up. I like Pittsburgh in a tough game, in a very close game, and it should go down to the fourth quarter. Upset special. Buffalo travels to New England, and the Lions, of course, the Patriots are favored by 3.5. And listen, Buffalo's a little banged up right now. I understand they've struggled lately. New England has played well. And look, I will absolutely be the first to admit that I was dead wrong in regards to New England, in regards to the Patriots. I thought that they were going to just have a 6-10, 5-11 type season. I thought they were going to be nowhere near making the playoffs. Listen, I was wrong. New England has, you know, Belichick proven why he is the best coach in the NFL. They have circled the wagons and righted the ship and put themselves in a position to win this AFC East division. But I like Buffalo in this game. And why? Because Buffalo, to me, you know, when you're picking these games, you have to look at, I mean, you have to take a lot of things into mind, you know, home field, intangible things, weather, stuff like that. But I always lean, if the game is close, evenly matched, I always will lean towards the more desperate team. And right now, the Buffalo Bills are the more desperate team. They've lost two straight games after starting out 5-1. And this is a game that they want to win this division that they really need to have, and just for their psyche, just to feel good about themselves, that they need to have. I like Buffalo in this game. I expect it to be a very close game. I expect Trent Edwards to pick apart that New England secondary, which is still dicey. I mean, New England. I don't see how New England didn't go after D'Angelo Hall, but maybe the Redskins beat them to him. But I. Listen, if I was New England, that would have been the first. As soon as he cleared waivers and became a free agent, I would have been on the phone with his agent like right away. But they don't get him, and that secondary, despite how well the defense has played, they still have an excellent defensive line. Castle has picked it up of late. I still don't trust that secondary, and I can see Trent Edwards having a big day against that Buffalo Bills secondary. I like the Bills 24-17 in this AFC East battle, in this AFC East tussle. San Diego and Kansas City, and when did the Chargers become this big time team? I'm looking at this line, and normally I wouldn't even think about this game. I mean, it's, you know, San Diego has been underachieving all year long. Kansas City is just awful. So normally you look at this game like, oh, okay, ho hum, whatever. San Diego in this game is favored by 15 points. This is a San Diego team that has played terrible defense. They've been as inconsistent as any team in the league. They don't have any right to be favored by more than two touchdowns against anybody. I don't care how bad the team is. I don't care if it's the Lions. I don't care who it is. I like Kansas City to cover in this matchup. I can't pick Kansas City to win the game. The game is at San Diego, so there's no way I would pick Kansas City for the outright upset. But I'm looking for Kansas City to cover. Tyler Thigpen, who got off to a very shaky start as the quarterback of Kansas City, has played better of late. and against two pretty good defenses in Tampa and the Jets. So, and I, he definitely could have his way with that second, with that San Diego defense, which again has been just awful. And to me, it's more than just Sean Marion being injured. His secondary has not played well, at all. I'm looking for the I'm looking for the Chiefs to cover and the Chargers to win 28-23. I would be surprised if Kansas City won this game. To be honest, you know, despite the fact I'm picking them to cover, I'm still there because they are just an awful football team. No Larry, they have no Larry Johnson, and they just they're not pretty to watch by any stretch of imagination. But who gave the rights for the San Diego Chargers to be favored by 15 over anybody? That just jumped out when I saw that line. Game of the week. Green Bay travels to Minnesota to take on the Minnesota Vikings. The line in this is the Vikings are favored by 2.5, and that's strictly based on home field advantage. If this game were in Green Bay, then Green Bay probably would be favored by 3, 3.5, something like that. I was very impressed with how Green Bay played against Tennessee. I thought they outplayed the Titans. I know Aaron Rodgers made a couple of mistakes. Their defense played well. You know what their receivers can do. Ryan Grant is starting to run the football better. I think Green Bay is ready to assume control of this division, despite the fact that they're down a game against the Chicago Bears, who are at 5-3, and Green Bay's at 4-4. Minnesota, I still can't figure out the Vikings. They're one of these teams that you can't hardly get a handle of. They're good one week, bad the next. The one thing I do know is the Vikings still don't have a quarterback. I don't trust Gus Frerotte from week to week. I know he played pretty decent last week, but this week he can throw 4 interceptions, and I would not be surprised. The Green Bay defense is starting to pick it up, and I expect Green Bay to win this game. I expect Aaron Rodgers to have a big day against the Minnesota's underachieving defense. Can somebody explain to me where has Jared Allen been this season? Here's a guy who sets a record for a signing bonus by a defensive player, but he has been. He might as well be on the side of a milk cart because he has been an absolute non-factor. The Bears put up 48 points against the Vikings, so they are not playing good defense. I expect the Packers to win this game 34-24, and again, begin their ascent and them taking control of this division. So there you go. I have the Chargers. I have the Kansas City Chiefs covering. I have Green Bay winning outright. I have Pittsburgh winning outright, and I have the Eagles winning outright, and I have Buffalo upsetting the New England Patriots. There you go with the Week 10 picks for the NFL season. Coming up, we have Inside the Burgundy and Gold. Of course, this is a segment that is devoted to you, the Washington Redskins fan, the Washington Redskins nation, the Redskins fans. And again, I understand it could not have been the greatest beginning of a week for you as the Redskins got physically manhandled by the Pittsburgh Steelers. And the first mistake the Washington Redskins made to me was the uniforms. I mean, what happened to the white on white? I mean, you go with these maroon color, you go with the all maroon, and you don't mess up karma. When you have good karma in sports, the one thing I've learned about watching sports in all of my years, 20 plus years of watching sports, you don't mess up good karma. When you have good karma, stick with it. I don't care if it's the smallest thing, leave it alone. And the Washington Redskins, when I see them come out with them all burgundy uniforms, I said, you know what? This is not good. Now, I'm a fan as well. And I was still optimistic about the win, about them winning the game. But I had a creepy feeling in the back of my mind when I saw them with these uniforms. So, leave. I mean, stick to the white. Stick to the all white. Or stick to the white and burgundy. Get rid of those. Burn those all burgundy and shirt and pants, uniforms, jerseys and pants. Stick to what's been getting you to 6-2. But on the serious side, as far as the Redskins, listen, I've been complaining about this all season with the Redskins. In spite of their record, in spite of the success you've seen out of Clint Portis and Jason Campbell and the defense, you cannot continuously leave points on the board and expect to beat championship caliber teams. The Washington Redskins in that game had 4 possessions. Their first 4 possessions, at some point in the possession, reached the Pittsburgh side of the field, and they had 6 points to show for it. Okay, minimum, and I'm not even giving them a touchdown. Minimum, that game should have been 12-0 at the end of the first quarter. Minimum, 12-0. I understand Pittsburgh has a tremendous defense. Pittsburgh's defense is as good as any defense in the league right now, playing pure and simple. But if you have Clinton Portis, if you have a good offensive line, if you have Santana Moss, who did not look right in that game, by the way, you have Jason Campbell. You should be able to at least put yourselves in field goal position, in a field goal position, field goal range when you have that great field position. I knew the Redskins were in trouble after that first quarter, after only being up 6-0. They had all the momentum. They forced Ben Roethlisberger into a turnover. They were knocking Roethlisberger all over the place. Pittsburgh's running game was basically non-existent. So they had everything going for them. Crowd going crazy, election eve, everything was feeling good at FedEx. But at 6-0, you didn't like what you saw. Pittsburgh goes out there, they get a block punt, which turned the whole game around. You know, you see Carlos Rogers drop an interception, and the wheels actually fall off for the Redskins. And a couple things I took note of from that game is, number one, the Redskins did not run the ball nowhere near enough. You know, they ran the ball. Pittsburgh coming into that game was only giving up 2.8 yards a carry. Well, the Washington Redskins in that game had averaged 4.8 yards a carry. They only ran the ball 15 times for 60 yards. That's in a game that was basically nip and tuck throughout. That was a game that was 16-6, and with the Redskins having a chance to score before Jason Campbell threw that critical interception. That game, you have to run the ball 25 to 30 times. You want to look at the difference in the game, or a big difference? Look at the carries. Pittsburgh had 29 carries. Washington had 15. Carries in a game of that magnitude, in a game that physical, the carries in the game are just as important as the yards gained. That means you're basically controlling the line of scrimmage. You know, your offensive line, though you might not be moving for great yards, you're still doing a decent job of keeping their defense on the field and your offense on the field, their defense on the field and their offense off the field. So that was a critical part, critical aspect of the game, in my opinion. Zorn has done an excellent job, and he got out coached. There's no two ways about it. Dick LeBeau, just the defensive mastermind of the Steelers, just coached circles around Jim Zorn, and they had no answer for those blitzes. They continuously knocked Campbell around. The one thing that would make me nervous for a Redskins fan is for the offensive line in terms of their pass protection. The pass protection has been a little suspect when the Redskins have been in those situations, especially with John Jansen playing. They need Stephon Heyer at some point in his career needs to step up and become the kind of pass protector that the Redskins fans and the Redskins know he can become. It's time. He's in his second year in the league now. It's time for him to step up and take control of that position. Jansen is an excellent run blocker, but Jansen is not on pass protection. Jansen is a liability. It's just that simple. Now, I understand Chris Samuels was banged up. He could have easily not played. So the offensive line was up against it anyway, going against that Pittsburgh defensive line, that front seven, which is as good. Their linebackers are the best in the league as a group. Harrison, Ferrier, Lamar Woodley, that group is nasty. They have a nasty bunch with that Pittsburgh defense. But again, the way it just goes back to the Redskins leaving points on the board. You cannot do this against championship caliber teams. You can't do it. And the Redskins are going to have to be careful. They're going to have to be very careful from here on out as far as the schedule goes, because they have a bye week, a much needed bye. They get D'Angelo Hall, which was a big pickup, with Sean Springs being in and out the lineup. Springs should play, I would think he should play in a Dallas game coming up next Sunday. But they're 6-3 right now, and they have a schedule where they will play Dallas, in the upcoming weeks. They still have games against Dallas and the Giants, and they still have a game against Philadelphia. In the upcoming weeks, Baltimore is still out to play, so they can mess around and be 6-4 if they don't be careful. Dallas will get healthier. You expect Romo, you expect Felix Jones, you expect Terrence Newman to play in that game. And Dallas, that will be, you talk about a desperate team. Dallas will be an absolute desperate team coming into FedEx next week. So the Redskins need to be careful in regards to, you know, 6-2, what can be 6-4 in a heartbeat. But again, I still think that this is a playoff team. I believe that the D'Angelo Hall signing was an absolute steal. It was an absolute steal. He will solidify that secondary, regardless of whether or not Springs is on the field. That's what it basically was. It was, you know, insurance for Shawn Springs. Because we don't know how healthy Shawn Springs is going to be for the rest of the year. Again, he's not, you know, by NFL standards, he's not a young man. He's not a spring chicken by any stretch of imagination. And he's been injury prone throughout the course of his career, and in particular the last, you know, 2 or 3 years. He's been great when he's been on the field, but he's had a major problem with staying on the field. Coming up after the break, after the update, we'll go political and deal with a historic Tuesday evening, and we'll talk about that coming up after the update. D'Angelo Hall has signed with the Washington Redskins for a 1-year deal. Again, Hall was cut by the Oakland Raiders, and before that he played with the Atlanta Falcons. Hall solidifies a secondary, Washington Redskins secondary that had been banged up with injuries, including Shawn Springs and Chris Horton, within recent weeks. NBA scores: Miami defeats San Antonio 99-83. Tony Parker, but the big story in that game, Tony Parker injures his ankle. He will be out anywhere from 2 to 4 weeks. San Antonio has got off to one of their worst starts in 12 years at 1-4. Utah improves to 5-0 as they defeat Oklahoma City 104-97. Jerry Sloan becomes the first coach in NBA history to win 1,000, to have 1,000 wins with one team. New Jersey defeats Detroit 103-96. They spoil the debut of Allen Iverson, who did score 24 points to go with 6 assists. Charlotte upsets New Orleans 92-89. Atlanta improves to 4-0 by defeating Toronto 110-92. Other winners in the NBA included Chicago, Memphis, Houston, Sacramento, Boston, and Denver. Every 15 minutes, tune into the sports update where I will give you the breaking news going on in the world of sports. Welcome back. Of course, on Tuesday night, you had history made with Barack Obama being elected the 44th president. And I'm just coming down from it, from just the emotional high of the whole of the situation, of the election. You know, I followed it, like a lot of people, I followed it tooth and nail, day in, day out, from the primaries, you know, from 07 on up until election night. And to see, you know, I'm going to work the next day, to see the unity amongst different races, white, black, Hispanic, or whoever, to see it not only within the workplace, but to see it on TV and just around the world was just something that I will never forget as long as I live. This is, I mean, it's almost bigger than history. I mean, I'm looking at Barack Obama and what he did to get to where he's at right now, having to go through the political dynasty in the Clintons, because I didn't think he was going to beat out Hillary Clinton to get that Democratic nomination. Thought he had a much better chance at beating McCain than he did Hillary Clinton. But to see that, and just to see this guy just run a perfect, flawless campaign, I mean, you can't run a better campaign than he did. And it was just, again, it's hard to even put into words. Because, you know, as a nation, as a country, we've been through a lot in the past 8 years. I'm looking at events in my lifetime that have been overwhelming, and two of them have occurred in the last 8 years, with 9/11 and, of course, Hurricane Katrina back in 2005. And both of those, the foundations of those events were a negative one. They were definitely a negative one. You know, I know you had some positive things come out of Katrina with everybody pulled together with the donations, and, you know, and what have you. And that's, you know, New Orleans is still trying to be rebuilt after, you know, even after 3 years. But this is just, you know, you can sit up there, you can sit up there and tell your children, you can tell your students, you know, you can be anything you want to be and not have any doubts in your mind about it being the case, about it being true. Not have any doubts. And there was a time, again, that you couldn't say that to your children or your students and believe it 100%. And believe I have to be honest about that. And you look at Barack Obama, and again, he's walking into a mess without question. I mean, the country is in, you know, economics and with the wars and with everything, you know, the energy crisis, energy and everything, all the issues that he's walking into is not going to be an easy job. And I would just ask everyone, myself included, you have to be patient. You're going to have to be patient with him. He's going to certainly ask for you. I mean, he's going to certainly ask for your patience. He certainly understands, you know, how serious his job is and how hard it's going to be. But trust me, if there's one guy that can turn this thing around, it's Barack Obama. And I understand all the problems that this country is facing. I understand that. And there was a time that I thought that that nobody could turn it around. There was no chance of anybody being able to turn around. But he is the guy. You know, certain people are born to do certain things. Like John Coltrane was born to play the saxophone. Like Michael Jordan was born to play basketball. I mean, the guy, he is a supernova. I mean, this guy is just, you get a sense of confidence and a security with him that, hey, not only is he the smartest kid in the classroom, but, he exudes that confidence, a quiet confidence, and he brings a calming effect to this office, and you need that. I mean, we needed Barack Obama to be president of the United States. And again, I will say it again, we needed the country more than ever, Barack Obama, to be president of the United States right now. America needed a Barack Obama, point blank. And again, I would implore everybody just has to be patient. It's not going to be an overnight process by any stretch of the imagination. It didn't take a year for us to get into this mess. It's not going to take a year to get out of this. But I would definitely like to give kudos to all the voters out there who went out there and shouted and, you know, had their voices heard loud and clear. Over 130 million people went out there and exercised that right to vote, that precious right to vote. And I especially kudos to the younger generation, the 18 to 29 year old. You know, I'm 29 years old, and my generation has taken a beating for not voting, for not being involved in this, not being involved in that. We're part of the reason why Barack Obama is in office right now, if not the biggest reason, as far as in terms of voting. He dominated that aspect of that percentage of voters. From the 18 to 29 year old, the 18 to 29 year old set records for that age group in terms of coming out to vote. I think the previous record was 20 million. This time it was over 24 million. I saw more talk about politics amongst that age group in the last year or two than I have ever seen in my life. I know politics on the surface stuff, the basic stuff that happens, but I mean, it was a point where I'm watching Charlie Rose, I'm watching CNN, I'm watching MSNBC, I'm watching everything to try to find out where Barack Obama's coming from, where John McCain's coming from, Sarah Palin, you know, whoever you want, Joe Biden, whoever. And that's the kind of interest that you have to have as a citizen of the United States. It's very important. But again, I feel very confident that Barack Obama will turn this thing around, and I can't say that. I had to be honest. I don't know if I could have said that or even would have believed that, say, 2-3 months ago, a year ago. But now I believe it. I mean, he has that unknown intangible that just people come along, that great people have, and I mean great people in terms of their talent and ability have, and he has that. It's not a question that he has that. And again, I would implore anybody to just go out there, stay involved in politics in terms of just paying attention to what's going on. It's very important not only for us, but for, you know, for the future generations to pass along something, you know, to pass along that and to preach that message of how important it is to vote. But to see, you know, to see everybody just coming together, that was just overwhelming. It really was to see everybody, no matter what the color, no matter what your color, no matter what ethnic group you came from, coming together. You saw Kenyans having, people in Kenya having a celebration. You saw people in London having a celebration. You saw, I mean, everybody come together as one. And that's what we are. I mean, we are the United States of America. And we have to work together in order to get, to reach a certain goals and to set aside a better future for our children. So I definitely think America got it right and made the right choice with Barack Obama. Next week, I understand that I was not able to, for the baseball fans out there, because there's a lot going on with the hot stove baseball. I will get to that next week without question. Again, with the election, football had a lot to do in this. I had a lot to do with this program, but I definitely will get to the hot stove baseball. I mean, man, listen, it's November, okay? It's November. Baseball, it's not going anywhere. Scott Boras is not going anywhere. Manny Ramirez, for the time being, it's not going anywhere. A lot of moves, there could be some big moves made between now and next week, but you expect most of the big moves to be made maybe Thanksgiving, first week. You know, the winter meetings are scheduled in December, I believe, the first or second week in December. So you definitely will see some big moves as far made in terms of the baseball with that. We'll get to that next week. We'll have another big program scheduled next week with the football and with the college football and what have you. But in closing, I will leave you with the speech. On election night from one recently elected president, Barack Obama. I'll leave you with that, and I will see you next week. Thanks for tuning in to the Saturday morning wake up call. See you next week.
Hello, Chicago. If there is anyone out there who still doubts that America is a place where all things are possible, we still wonder if the dream of our founders is alive in our time. We still question the power of our democracy. Tonight is your answer. It's the answer told by lines that stretch around schools and churches in numbers this nation has never seen. By people who waited 3 hours and 4 hours, many for the first time in their lives, because they believed that this States and blue states, we are and always will be the United States of America. It's the answer that led those who've been told for so long by so many to be cynical and fearful and doubtful about what we can achieve, to put their hands on the arc of history and bend it once more toward the hope of a better day. It's been a long time coming, but tonight, because of what we did on this day, in this election, at this defining moment, change has come to America. little bit earlier this evening, I received an extraordinarily gracious call from Senator McCain. Senator McCain fought long and hard in this campaign, and he fought even longer and harder for the country that he loved. He has endured sacrifices for America that most of us cannot begin to imagine. We are better off for the service rendered by this brave and selfless leader. I congratulate him. I congratulate Governor Palin for all that they've achieved, and I look forward to working with them to renew this nation's promise in the months ahead. I want to thank my partner in this journey, a man who campaigned from his heart and spoke for the men and women he grew up with on the streets of Scranton and rode with on the train home to Delaware, the Vice President-elect of the United States, Joe Biden. And I would not be standing here tonight without the unyielding support of my best friend for the last 16 years, the rock of our family, the love of my life, the nation's next First Lady, Michelle Obama. Sasha and Maria, I love you both more than you can imagine, and you have earned the new puppy that's coming with us to the White House. And while she's no longer with us, I know my grandmother's watching, along with the family that made me who I am. I miss them tonight. I know that my debt to them is beyond measure. To my sister Maya, my sister Alma, all my other brothers and sisters, thank you so much for all the support that you've given me. I'm grateful to them. To my campaign manager, David Clough. The unsung hero of this campaign, who built the best political campaign, I think, in the history of the United States of America. To my chief strategist, David Axelrod, who's been a partner with me every step of the way. To the best campaign team ever assembled in the history of politics, you made this happen, and I am forever grateful for what you sacrificed to get it done. But above all, I will never forget who this victory truly belongs to. It belongs to you. It belongs to you. I was never the likeliest candidate for this office. We didn't start with much money or many endorsements. Our campaign was not hatched in the halls of Washington. It began in the backyards of Des Moines, in the living rooms of Concord, in the front porches of Charleston. It was built by working men and women who dug into what little savings they had to give $5, $10, and $20 to the cause. It grew strength from the young people who rejected the myth of their generation's apathy. Who left their homes and their families for jobs that offered little pay and less sleep. It grew strength from the not-so-young people who braved the bitter cold and scorching heat to knock on doors of perfect strangers. And from the millions of Americans who volunteered and organized and proved that more than two centuries later, a government of the people, by the people, and for the people has not perished from the earth. This is your victory. Now, I know you didn't do this just to win an election. And I know you're